Welcome to Creating Sanctuary, a global interview series featuring 21 heroes who are saving animals' lives. I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and the hero I'm interviewing today is Richard Hoyle. He's the founder and director of the Pig Preserve in Jamestown, Tennessee. Welcome, Richard. I am so glad you could join us.
Good morning, Yolanda. I'm glad to be here.
So, Richard, you are a Marine, a Vietnam vet, you have a master's degree in management, and you're a paramedic and a fire chief. So how is it that you now run a pig preserve?
That's a question I ask myself about 20 times a day. Actually, my wife and I kind of backed into this. Miniature pigs came to this country in 1985. Prior to that, basically having a pig as a pet meant having a large pig out in the pasture outside that you called a pet, but they weren't considered companion animals because of their size. When the miniature pigs arrived here, the initial intention was to breed them for sale to zoos, but pig lovers all over the country realized that for the first time they had an opportunity to obtain a pig that was of suitable size and disposition to be used as a companion animal. And so the original pot-bellied pig fad took over this country in late 85. My wife had always been a big pig fan. Our house motif was decorated in, like, early pig. And so she started, I want a pet pig. And probably about 1988 or early 89, I gave in and bought her a pot-bellied piglet. Her name was Patty Murphy, and after we got her, we quickly realized that this was not like any dog or cat or any other companion we'd ever had, that this was somewhat of a unique animal. And we kept her for about 6 or 8 months, and we had never believed that you should have one of any animal. If we had a dog, we had two dogs. If we had a cat, we had two cats. So they would have companionship of their like species for when we were not available. So I actually got a rescued pot-bellied piglet that one of my firemen had caught running down the road that either escaped or been set loose. And he actually became our first rescue. We were living on an acre and a half in Virginia at the time that luckily was zoned agricultural. And somehow after we got that first pig, my phone started ringing with people who had found abandoned pigs or had gotten a pig and it hadn't worked out in their family, asking us to take it. So over the next year or so, we accumulated around 20 rescued pigs. A few of them we had adopted back out, but most of them we ended up keeping.
Mm-hmm.
After a year or so of doing this, I told my wife, I said, this is getting out of hand. I said, we've either got to quit doing it or we have got to learn to do it right. Well, at that time, there weren't too many pig sanctuaries in the United States. Matter of fact, I think it was a grand total of one. Luckily, it was nearby in West Virginia, and we went up and introduced ourselves to the two gentlemen that ran it. And we asked if we could hang out with them on our spare time and kind of learn about pigs and sanctuaries and stuff like that, which we did for about 2 to 2.5 years. And while we were doing that, we started looking for a larger piece of land. I was working with the fire department at the time, so the shift work of working 24-hour shifts allowed me plenty of days off during the month to take care of the pigs. After a couple of years, we bought a 17-acre place in Culpeper, Virginia, and we started our first formal sanctuary, if you will. And we only did miniature pigs. It was called Mini Pigs Incorporated. And we ran it in Virginia for about 13 years. So that's kind of how we backed into the pig rescue business.
At what point did you decide to do your 501c3 and all of that and call yourself a real sanctuary or a preserve?
We did our first 501c3 back in the early 90s as soon as we opened Mini Pigs Incorporated.
Okay.
And before we had just kind of been a little mom-and-pop informal operation. But when we got to 17 acres and when we realized that we were going to be taking a large number of pigs, it became prudent to go ahead and incorporate and get our 501c3, which back then was a much more simplistic evolution than it is today.
Yeah, it kind of leads into my question. You wanted the topic of our talk today to be, quote, creating, building, and maintaining a grassroots farm animal sanctuary, .. a special kind of mental illness. So I get that you're joking, and obviously you love what you do, but explain why you're referring to it as a mental illness.
Well, if you look at the evolution of us from a small miniature pig sanctuary into the 100-acre pig preserve that we have today, it is a type of mental illness, because when we took in our first farm pig as a favor to one of our board members, we fell in love with pigs all over again, because the farm pigs, the larger production pigs, are, while they're the same species as the miniature pigs, they're an entirely different animal. And they require a great deal more land. They require a great deal more time. Obviously, they're a lot more expensive to take care of. And so as we evolved into a pig preserve from a potbelly pig sanctuary, the level of commitment went up dramatically. And I differentiate between what we call mom-and-pop sanctuaries, educated people call them grassroots sanctuaries, as opposed to the large, well-known sanctuaries like Farm Sanctuary, Woodstock, and all of those that basically bring in millions of dollars a year. The vast majority of the sanctuaries in this country are mom-and-pop or grassroots sanctuaries, and collectively we rescue a whole lot more animals than the big, well-known sanctuaries, and typically we do it at a much lower cost per animal per year. But what we didn't realize early on going into it was the total level of commitment and the almost monastic lifestyle that it requires to run a grassroots sanctuary. And at that point, I think that's one reason why a lot of small sanctuaries start up and fail. Even going into it with the level of experience and knowledge that we had gained prior to starting the sanctuary, we had actually underestimated, again, the total level of commitment. You know, the animals in the sanctuary consume virtually every waking minute of your life. If you're not fully funded or heavily funded, it'll consume every dime you have. It is a total commitment. And I think that's why starting to realize that and continuing not only to do it but to grow, there's got to be some kind of weird craziness in there. Not necessarily a bad craziness, but you got to be crazy to continue to do something that you know is going to consume you as it does. And after having been in the business for 30 years, I can tell you that after 30 years, you know, you're going to end up, if you're not careful, emotionally, physically, and financially bankrupt.
Oh, my goodness.
I have the benefit of being able to look back on 30 years and look at all the things we did right and all the things we did wrong and how would I do it differently and that kind of thing.
Well, actually, if you don't mind, what are the things that you wish you would have done differently?
Oh, Lord. I don't think I would have tried to run the sanctuary as much on our own as my wife and I did. I think we would have opted for a much larger, much more aggressive board of directors to take some of the burdens, especially some of the administrative burdens and fundraising burdens, off of our shoulders. I think too many grassroots sanctuaries try to run just the mom and pop, the husband and wife, or just members of the family. And I think that burden on top of the actual day-to-day care of the animals has proved to be, over the years, almost overwhelming at times. So anybody who's going to start a farmed animal sanctuary, regardless of the species, that they build a good, solid board of directors. And not necessarily just people who love animals and want to come out and, you know, rake poop and clean barns and wash bowls and stuff, but people who can take over the areas that consume a lot of your time and that are as important as day-to-day animal care, the administrative, the fundraising, the publicity, all of that stuff. Because a sanctuary, while it's a labor of love, has got to be run as a business. And it has all the tools that a normal business has. And too many times, my wife and I are guilty of this, we just took all those tentacles on board and tried to do them all. And there's simply not enough energy or enough hours in the day to get them all done properly.
Right.
And skills that I don't have. Like, I'm an absolutely terrible fundraiser. It's not in my skill set, and it's not anything that I learned in all my years in education. And so I have always desperately searched for somebody that can help me do fundraising. You know, those are the kinds of things you have to look at yourself and say, okay, what am I good at? Where are my weaknesses? And you've got to build your board to make up the gaps and reinforce your weak areas.
Great. That's really helpful to hear, actually. And I'm amazed that you guys did it for 30 years and largely as a mom and pop. That's really miraculous that you stayed in it and that you've grown as much as you have. So it speaks to your strength of character or your mental illness. I'm not sure.
Probably a little bit of both.
So actually, let's flip that question and ask, let me ask you, what are you really glad that you did do? And how, you know, what were your, what was your main success in setting up the sanctuaries or the preserve?
Well, to answer that question, I have to look at how we evolved from a potbelly pig sanctuary, Mini Pigs Incorporated, into the pig preserve, and how we went from a 17-acre really pretty place with a bunch of little potbellies running around to a 100-acre farm sanctuary located in the middle of the Cumberland Mountains in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. As we began learning about the animals that we were taking in and studying them, just about that time I was asked to be on the board of directors and vice president of the American Sanctuary Association. Don't ask me why they I think I might have been the token grassroots sanctuary guy on there, because I was on there with some real heavy hitters in
wow.
the sanctuary.
Okay.
And I stayed with the American Sanctuary Association on their board for quite a while. And what it did is it exposed me to a wide variety of sanctuaries and types of sanctuaries, not only in the species that they rescued, but in the way they were set up. And there were several members of the board who ran preserves, and they were predominantly wild animal preserves. Tippi Hedren is an example from Shambhala. She has an animal preserve. She specializes in African animals. And there were others. And so I started asking the question, what's the difference between a sanctuary and a preserve? And what I came to understand was, looking at my operation and comparing it to what a preserve does, the animals that I had at my sanctuary were in small pastures, large pens, fairly crowded because we only had 17 acres, and because we both worked full-time jobs, we had to have the animals fairly accessible so that we could work with them and care for them efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
We were certainly taking care of their basic needs. They were safe. They were loved. They were well-fed. They were well-housed. They were cared for. But what I came to realize was that I didn't think my animals were very happy. And that was something that I hadn't taken into consideration. I had taken a bunch of animals who are nomadic by nature and extremely social, and I had crammed them in these little tiny pastures to make it easier on me to manage.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the question for me became, how can I rescue these animals, take good care of them as any sanctuary or rescue should, yet improve their quality of life and make them happy? I need to address their physical and emotional needs both. And so in talking to the people who ran preserves, my question became, you guys do it with all these lions and tigers and bears. Why can't I do it with pigs? And everybody said, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's never been done before. So with that as a goal, we started. You know, I was getting ready to retire from the fire department. Northern Virginia was getting to be extremely expensive, so we started looking for a large tract of land where we could convert our miniature pig sanctuary into a pig preserve, with the goal being we would still offer the same level of care, love, respect, et cetera, but we would, in addition to that, offer the animals the freedom to live life on their terms and live
right.
as close as possible to the kind of life they would expect to live were they running free in nature. And that's been our goal for the last 13 or 14 years since we started the pig preserve here in Tennessee.
That's really beautiful, because pigs love to root around in the dirt, and they actually love clean grass and fields as well as, you know, mud puddles and all of that. So our traditional image of pigs is they love mud, but that's only if there's not clean water available, right?
No, actually, my pigs will walk right by clean water and jump in a mud hole. The primary reason why pigs enjoy the primary reason why pigs enjoy mud hole is because all pigs do not have sweat glands. Therefore, they lack the ability to sweat, which makes it very difficult for them to blow off heat. And by immersing them in mud and muddy water, they cool their bodies. They also cover themselves and protect those, especially the lighter color ones. It protects them from sunburn, and it helps keep external parasites off of them. And there's a fourth reason. They just seem to really enjoy a good mud hole. but they also, you know, are nomadic. My farm pigs here cover acres every day, roaming and foraging in the woods and grazing in the grass and swimming in the ponds. Even my more elderly farm pigs get out and cover a tremendous amount of territory every day. And, of course, the potbellies, they roam. They don't cover quite as much territory. And we have quite a few feral pigs here, what people call wild boars. And we're the only sanctuary mm-hmm. intent can take them in. And, of course, they'll roam the whole 100 acres all day long. They're very, very mobile and very active animals.
Mm-hmm.
But here our animals are free to choose their own social groups. And we have about 10 or 12 different social groups. And wherever a social group forms, we provide an animal shelter, a barn, if you will, for them in the part of the sanctuary that they seem to prefer. So we've got like 18 barns scattered over the property. And when we feed the animals in the evening, we feed each social group separately. Again, they get to live with the pigs who they prefer to live with.
Mm-hmm.
We're not forcing them into one pasture where there may be 100 pigs and they have to live with whoever we put in there. They choose their own companions, and typically those social groups stay together their entire life.
That sounds really beautiful, and they all get along then too.
They do. You know, in the course of their roaming around, if one social group bumps into another social group, there'll be greetings and maybe a few scuffles. You know, but generally, yeah, they coexist well, but they always gravitate back to their own preferred area to eat and sleep at night. As many pigs as we have here, there are very few physical confrontations. Most of the time, it's a meet and greet, and they go on their way.
That's really, really wonderful. So I had not heard of the concept of a preserve versus a sanctuary before, and so this is really actually an education for me. It's really beautiful that you were able to do that.
One of the offshoots of that, by the way, is that the animals remain significantly more healthy, and they live a lot longer. When we started this, they told us, the experts told us that the average life of a farm pig was 8 to 10 years.
Uh-huh.
We have mature farm pigs here who are 16 and 18 years old, and we have potbelly pigs over 20 years old.
Wow.
The lifestyle that we provide for them, where they get fresh air, exercise, water. We provide a very nutritious custom-made feed for them. It's an all-natural grain-based diet. They get virtually no medicines, no vaccinations, and they're emotionally happy animals because they're living life on their terms. The result has been a herd of extremely healthy and extremely long-lived animals.
That sounds amazing. I might want to come and visit.
You're welcome anytime.
Do you take visitors there?
We're not open to the public. We cherish or protect the privacy of the animals here, but we do take in visitors on an appointment basis, and during the spring, summer, and fall, we have a fairly steady stream of visitors here. And unlike a lot of sanctuaries, we're kind of informal here. When you show up, we tell you to put your boots and old clothes on, and you get in the four-wheel ATV with us, and we drive you out, and we just let you get out and interact with all the animals.
That's great. That sounds wonderful.
We don't do the guided tours and pet the animals in this pen over here. When you come here, we immerse you in the full experience of the preserve.
Wow. So my next question is, when things kind of get difficult for you, when you get a little bit overwhelmed, what is it that keeps you inspired? What is it that keeps you attached to those pigs and attached to their well-being?
Oh, that's a tough question because – recently I've turned 70 years old, and I've got some, ongoing medical issues, and it's been harder and harder physically just to get out and to do the work that's required because, as you can well imagine, it's a 12-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week operation. You know, we don't stop for holidays or birthdays or because the weather's bad or because you have, you don't feel good.
Right.
I think I've been cursed with an overdeveloped sense of responsibility. And I'm stubborn. I'm an old stubborn Irishman. And, it's just that I'm just not going to let it get the best of me kind of attitude. But I also know that I've got over 150 animals out here who rely on me to get up every day and go out and do what needs to be done to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily now, as I've gotten older and since we've been here, we've developed a little bit larger volunteer base, so I draw volunteers from Nashville and Knoxville and Chattanooga, especially on the weekends, to help come out and do some of the more time-consuming chores. And, of course, now we got a grant, and I have a farm manager on board who has been a godsend to me. And we're working towards Afton, or my farm manager, taking over the sanctuary and allowing my wife and I to finally retire after 30-plus years. So, you know, when we first started interning with this pig sanctuary up in West Virginia many years ago, one of the directors up there took me off to the side and he said, "Why do you want to run a pig sanctuary?" And I said, "Well, I love the pigs." And he told me, you will find that loving the pigs is not enough." And I think I didn't understand him at the time, but now I think I do. Just loving the pigs is not enough to get you up every morning when it's 15 below zero outside and the wind's howling and the sleet's coming down and you don't feel good. And you have to go out and deal with 150 very surly pigs who blame you personally for the weather. it's more than love. It's actually a stubborn determination that I think you're either born with or you're not.
Mm-hmm. What is the most rewarding part of your work?
I think the most rewarding part of my work is watching a pig or a group of pigs who have been abused, abandoned, treated terribly, confined indoors or in small pens their entire life. And when they arrive here and the gate to the trailer opens and they step out and see sunshine and field grass under their feet for the first time.
Oh, that's such a beautiful image.
You know, there are a lot of emotional roller coasters at any sanctuary because you're always dealing with new animals, but you're also dealing with sick animals and injured animals and animals who are getting old and getting ready to die. And, you know, many of these animals have been with us for 15, 16, 18, even 20 years. And so there's a lot of emotional downsides to running a sanctuary, but it's offset. We recently lost two of our elderly farm pigs. They were both into their late teens. And the day after we buried the last of the two that died, a trailer rolled up here and disgorged two young farm pigs, a little male and a little female, and we are watching them start their life here. And that's kind of the circle of life as it applies to our sanctuary.
Right. One last question for you, Richard. In terms of animal welfare, what is giving you the most hope right now? There's been a lot of changes in the last few years, and I'm wondering if you see hope in some of those changes that are happening, like in people's diets and in lifestyle.
Well, I think probably one of the biggest things that's affecting animal welfare and animal rights in this country is the large and massive upsurge in the number of people transitioning to a vegan and plant-based lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
When we started this 30 years ago, my wife and I were both meat eaters. We quit eating pork products not long after we got our first pig. A couple of years later, we became vegetarian, and we have been vegan for probably over 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started the vegan lifestyle, hard to find another vegan and almost impossible to find vegan products to eat. Now, virtually everybody that comes out here to volunteer, my donor base, you know, there are vegans everywhere, and there's a plethora of vegan products out there, and making it a lot easier to follow a vegan plant-based lifestyle. I think that single movement, more than anything, is probably going to impact animal welfare and animal rights in the next few years. I think it's already starting. I'm starting to see it slowly but surely in a lot of subtle ways.
That's fabulous. You know, I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, where, you know, Berkeley area, where a lot of this stuff, you know, was going on in the 70s. But it's great to hear that it's also happening in Tennessee, in farm country in Tennessee even.
Well, so, I'm pretty much a southern boy, you know, raised in the South, you know, and where everybody lives on grease and grits.
Right.
And up here in the Cumberland Mountains in this rural part of Tennessee, we're probably the only vegans in our county. And we have to go all the way to Nashville or Knoxville to buy vegan products. But in the larger towns in Nashville and Knoxville and Chattanooga, all there's vegan groups and farm animal save groups growing up left and right. And so I'm very encouraged by that, because I think the South's probably, you know, going to end up being the last bastion against plant-based diet and vegans. And if we're making progress here, there's got to be more being made elsewhere.
Agreed. Okay, Richard Hoyle, thank you so much for your time. And I also want to thank our listeners and encourage them to go to your website at thepigpreserve.org. You've been listening to Creating Sanctuary for Animals. And I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and I'm looking forward to talking to you all again soon. Thank you, and bye-bye.